Similar to a well-tuned automobile, a guitar requires the same level of attention to perform at its very best. No matter how expensive your guitar may be, we will treat you and your instrument with the utmost respect. Call 920-723-1733 or visit jeffsguitar.com. Jeff's Guitar Clinic in Fort Atkinson. We love guitars.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
Welcome to another podcast. It's SlysOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now, John Nichols from the Capital Times and the Nation. John, I can't ever really remember a primary night like this one in Wisconsin. I'm trying to think of another race that this is analogous to, and I really can't think of one.
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find something like this in recent times. Although, can you hear me?
Yeah. I'm just wondering if you're going to go back to Governor Loomis.
No, that would be bad. Loomis was a great victory, followed by immense challenge and disappointment, which we can talk about on a full podcast sometime in the future. But no, I was thinking about 1970, and that was a year, you didn't have an incumbent running for re-election, but you had the lieutenant governor of a sitting incumbent as a Republican nominee, very sure bet there. And then in the Democratic Party, you had a lot of churn. You had, you know, people who had kind of been around for a while. One guy, Pat Lucy, and then you had another guy, Don Peterson, challenging him as sort of the outsider. If you wanted to look for analogies, you might look at, Lucy being the kind of senior political figure, former lieutenant governor, stuff like that. Don Peterson being the face of all these, you know, kind of new movements, anti-war, some of that. And it was a pretty, you know, contentious primary. But Lucy won it with unexpected ease. It was a big victory. And then the Democratic Party came together very solidly. And, you know, to the surprise of a lot of folks that fall, Democrats really just swept. They had a very, very good result after a primary that people saw as kind of amorphous, ill-defined. Mm-hmm. So I'll give you that as one possible example. And remember that you're right that there's no clear analogies. But the one thing to remember about that 70 race, as an example, just one example, you could also maybe look at 82 as another one where you had a number of candidates who weren't all that strong, but then Earl came through and prevailed. Both the case of 70 and 82, you had a newly elected Republican president in office at a time when Republicans were seeking to hold the governorship and had a pretty good run. And suddenly a lot of national factors went against the Republicans, and they ended up having a bad result.
All right.
And that's where I see, that's the analogy I see to this year.
You know, it's interesting. In 1982, Lee Dreiffus announced he wasn't running for re-election. Wisconsin's economy was in terrible shape. We were in a recession, and there wasn't enough money to cover operating expenses. Okay? So Republicans, and then they nominated an absolute imbecile in Terry Kohler, who was not even popular. He'd actually do very well in the modern Republican Party, but in 1982...
he'd be a voice of reason in the modern Republican
Party.
I know.
So Tony Evers, here's a guy who got in the race. Yeah. He is not dynamic. I wouldn't say that he lit the world on fire, but for some reason, he just held steady this whole race.
One of the wisest people who was talking to me about this, I'll say his name, it was Mark Pocan. It's very interesting. At a certain point, maybe in early July, late June, early July, I suggested to Pocan in a conversation, you know, it looks like there's some movement for Kelda. It looks like Malin's pulling something. Helen Roy is another candidate for governor. Malin Mitchell, another candidate for governor. Looks like these people have got some things going on. And what Pocan said is, you know, there's an interesting thing about Tony Evers. He started this race in like the 25 to 30 range. And poll after poll, he has remained in that 25 to 30 range. And unless he falls below that, it's exceptionally unlikely that anybody's going to catch up to him.
And
it wasn't that Pocan was backing him. It was just Pocan saying, here's practical politics here.
All right, well,
he was right.
Let's listen to Tony Evers at his victory speech at the Park Motor Inlet, or the Park Best Western, or whatever they're calling it these days. Here
yeah,
is
very nicely.
It is a very. They put a lot of money into it. All right, here's Tony Evers.
So here we go, folks. I'm Tony Evers, and I'm going to be the next governor of the state of Wisconsin. Teacher, principal, and now state superintendent of Wisconsin's public schools, I've seen on the faces of our kids what the devastation of Scott Walker's cuts to public education has done. I've seen parents and families struggling with rising health care costs and stagnant wages. I've driven, as you have, on crumbling roads. And I've watched as Scott Walker has made decision after decision that benefits himself and his wealthy donors and not what benefits us, the people of Wisconsin.
That's right.
Folks, Walker has been here 8 years and the problems are not going away. As governor, I will change that. And I will get results.
Well, that's a pretty pragmatic kickoff to a campaign and drawing a contrast. That's letting people know you're going to do something that affects their lives.
Right. Very practical stuff. You know, I think we can fairly say that the most energetic part of that pronouncement was the guy in the crowd that yelled, "That's right." And it was, you know, I mean, that's very measured, very calm presentation, beginning, by the way, with an introduction, if you notice that. He like kind of went through a little bit of his resume at the top, which is sort of, you know, after you've just won a nomination, an intriguing approach, but not a dumb one. It's, you know, he's basically recognizing he's just come through a primary with a lot of intensive focus among Democrats. Now he's trying to talk to the whole state, knowing that this is something that's going to be heard. The other thing that I thought was interesting in that was that, you know, we've got kind of a historic pattern of issues that Democrats in the modern era have hit on, at least since Bill Clinton in 92, and that's healthcare, education, and crumbling roads. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
The number three thing I
right.
pretended was, number three was crumbling roads. That is a very telling reminder that Evers is not going to run on rote. He's not going to just do the standard campaign that the folks in Washington say, okay, this year everybody's running with these messages. Putting the roads up there as a high priority is a reflection of what's going on in Wisconsin right now. And there was kind of, as he went on, there was some vague reference, a little bit of reference to, you know, some of the Foxconn stuff. I wish he was a little stronger on that, to be quite honest, because I think that's also something that's got to be a part of the fall debate. But in general, I was there. I saw him give the speech. He spoke for longer than he should needed to. It was, you know, it really was sort of the laundry list acceptance of nomination speech. But by and large, very solid.
Well,
certainly what the Democrats would need.
One of the things candidates need to do, and Leah Vuchmer really blew it last night, she was thanking people. She was talking about Jim Sensenbrenner. She was talking about Ron Johnson. They've got to understand TV stations aren't going to hang with them very long. And
I agree with that.
You need to kick your speech off immediately with your message.
I'm running to change this state. I totally agree with you. And, you know, here's the other thing about it for Leah Guttmacher. After a primary, now she won pretty solidly, you have to give her that. But after a primary where she took a lot of hits for being an establishment political careerist insider, right? What does she do?
She talks about Jim Sensenbrenner.
She thanks every establishment careerist insider in the
Well,
state.
It's just who she
and
is.
That's not so smart. Yeah, I mean, that was a particularly not smart move. But as I can tell you last night, I went to the Evers party, went to a couple other events. Whenever you ran into Tammy Baldwin folks, when they were looking at the prospects, when it became clear that Leah Guttmacher was going to be their opponent, boy, you were seeing some incredibly broad smiles.
Yes, I don't think they wanted, I don't think either of those candidates were very strong, but I don't think they wanted to run against Nicholson versus Guttmacher. All right, one more clip from Tony Evers.
No, I'm a proud Plymouth progressive. For those of you who don't know, Plymouth is the cheese capital of the world. And the reason I know that, we have a big sign downtown that says cheese capital of the world. And if you still weren't convinced, we have one of those big plastic cows downtown, too. My first job was in a cheese factory, and that's what, frankly, I got my love for cheddar cheese. The Plymouth has been in the national news lately. 15% of our nation's cheese comes through Plymouth. And Donald Trump's tariffs are having a devastating impact on my hometown and the people and the businesses and the industry that call Plymouth home. It's been heartbreaking to watch. Instead of doing the right thing for Wisconsin, Scott Walker has decided to bury his head in the sand. He left Plymouth behind, and he's turned his back on Wisconsin for his own political gain. That is a major difference between Scott Walker and me. Scott Walker does what's best for Scott Walker. I will do best for the people of the state of Wisconsin.
All right. How much of a liability is Donald Trump going to be for Scott Walker?
Well, first and foremost, that was by far the best part of Evers' speech. In fact, frankly, I would have put it a lot closer to the front. And it was funny, by the way. He had people laughing. He was doing biography that really matters, that he actually worked in a factory, right? And that he, you know, happened, he's tied into Wisconsin industry, and then he ties it to national issues and Donald Trump. Very well done. Extremely well done. And look, Trump doesn't have to be a big factor. We know he'll be a factor. The Republican race was all about Trump love. That is almost certainly it's Trump that is going to reelect Tammy Baldwin. And so she may win big and she may win on her own to some extent, but she's certainly going to be helped by the Trump factor. I think that you know looms over the whole thing. In the governor's race, remember this slide. Scott Walker has never gotten, you know, much above 52%, right? So his results have always been essentially toward the middle. If you look at Tommy Thompson, for example, Tommy Thompson started in the range of 52%, and then he was getting to the 60s. You know, he's getting close to the 70s, right?
Well, he got 68% in 1994.
That's what I'm saying.
And if it hadn't been for about 7 or 8 people in Menominee County, he would have won every county in the state.
Every county. And so, but you see what I'm saying with Tommy. In 3 cycles, right, or in 3 elections, he went up, up, up. Walker hasn't done that. Walker has stayed steady around 51.
How much, though, is that a testament to the nationalization of politics?
Well, yes, absolutely. I'll give it to you. Nationalization of politics. But if the Trump factor is only good for 2% shift, 3% shift, right? What most people would think of as a relatively small shift. What does that do, Sly?
Well,
if you're at 52% and you get a 3% shift, what happens?
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah. Adios, amigo. And, or, you know, whatever phrase you want to use. It's an important way of understanding how politics operates. You don't need massive shifts to make something like this happen. What you need is a movement, a little bit of movement. And I think Trump provides that. I think that I've said from the start of this race that the likelihood is that, Walker will run probably the best campaign of his life this year, better than the recall, better than his first campaign. He will really do everything right, dot every I, cross every T. And that is why he will remain absolutely viable to the end. But in the end, the fact of Donald Trump and the fact that Donald Trump's, appeal in Wisconsin, by the way, recent polls shows really not that good, going down or at least holding steadily low. And so I think that Trump is a major factor, but not the kind of major factor that people who, think, oh, yeah, you're going to get a, 20% shift or 15%. I'm not saying that. I'm saying 3-4%.
All right, stand by.
4% is enough to change the gubernatorial race.
We'll talk more with John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation at sliceoffice.com.
When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Welcome back to sliceoffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers, Madison Firefighters Local 311, Madison Teachers Incorporated, and Madison Teamsters. All right, so obviously the other people in the race weren't able to come close to Tony Evers. The Mike McCabe effort, he had a very, very vocal group of people, but in the end, there weren't very many of them, John.
No, and this is something that, again, I think we talked about this way back as we were looking at this race, when I think probably at the time we were looking at 10 candidates, still with Dana Walks and Hannah Gronick in there. When you have a field this big, the key in this field is that a lot of candidates are going to get strong, committed bases of supporters. But the question is, can any of them go beyond that? And here's what we ended up with last night. There's simply no question that Mike McCabe and Kathleen Vinehout, who in many ways are the two kind of most, ardent reformers in the race, for lack of a better way of looking at them, maybe a little bit more of a Bernie kind of thing going on. Each of them got, a credible small base of support. And, they finished, on the list and had support around the state, but neither of them broke through. Vinehout actually did better in Madison and Dane County than I think some people expected. But then even when you go above that slide, when you go to Kelda Royce and Maylin Mitchell, early in the evening, Maylin Mitchell looked to be having a really strong finish, better than I think a lot of people expected. He was in the mid-20s, behind Evers, no question of that, but certainly, very solid. It turns out it looks like that was a lot of strong support from the Milwaukee area. And as time went on in the evening, he kind of slowly ticked down into the mid-teens. Kelda Royce, was always sort of in the mid-teens there and never really ticked up. She did better in Dane County and so got a little bit. But you ended up, Sly, with a thing where nobody running against Tony Evers got above 20%. And the reason for that is that you had a number of credible candidates who each got their, 7, 8, 13, 15%. And it doesn't work that way. Somebody had to take off as the clear alternative. And when you look down that list at the end, nobody took off as a clear alternative to Tony Evers.
That's what made Evers unique, is he did not have the political activist support. He had this broad general group of people that are somewhat engaged in Wisconsin politics, but may not be the people putting yard signs out. So that's what made this sort of unique. All right. So,
and again, can I just one last thing? Go take you back to that 1970 race. Similar situation. Pat Lucey, former party chair, very tied into the
you know, kind of party establishment. The activists, the young people back that year, and also a lot of the new people coming into politics, they were all for Don Peterson, the more anti-war Gene McCarthy guy. But in the end of the day, I think a lot of people in that race and many races along the way determined that Lucy was the more likely winner. And you cannot underestimate the power of the desire of Democrats, activists and non-activists, for somebody they thought could win. And so I think a lot of people cast that vote for Tony Evers simply because he'd been elected three times statewide. He looked like somebody who could win in the view of the people that voted for him.
All right. Mandela Barnes won 71 of 72 counties. He was outspent in this primary. He had a legitimate opponent, Kurt Kober, who ran an effective, well, I shouldn't say it was an effective ad campaign. It obviously wasn't. He got 30% of the vote. But he, I thought they were relatively effective ads. But Mandela, nobody can say there was some sort of black-white divide and Mandela only won the urban areas of the state. Mandela won everywhere.
Mandela did better than Doug LaFollette.
Right.
You know, and look, I mean, Doug LaFollette, hate whether you like him or not, that's not the point. And he had a credible opponent.
Well, I like him, and I voted for him.
But what I'm saying is that, Doug, if you were to say, well, who's going to get the biggest percentage on primary night? Who's likely to get the biggest percentage?
You sound a little bit, can you move the phone a little closer to you, John? You're sounding a little distant.
Yeah. I apologize. Yeah, okay. But see, though, I think a lot of people would have said, who's going to get the biggest percentage? And I think that the on average, people would have said Doug LaFollette, right? And that wasn't the case. Mandela Barnes got overwhelmingly, biggest win, most spread out across the state. And, you know, I have to tell you, when you talk to people last night at the different victory parties and the different events, there was a real sense that what's going to come out of this primary is not just a nominee for governor, but a ticket, i.e., a list of Democrats who are running, not just for governor, but for lieutenant governor, for attorney general, for secretary of state, for state treasurer. And even at the Evers victory party, Evers was shouting out to all these people and naming them. The fact of the matter is that I think for the first time in quite a while, there's a real likelihood that Democrats in Wisconsin will run as a ticket and say, you know, here's a whole bunch of people who ought to be in these positions.
Right.
That's good for Evers because, you know, people will say, and I think it's fair, that he's maybe not the most exciting candidate in the history of American politics. But if he's linked with young candidates, experienced candidates, from Tammy Baldwin over to Sarah Godlewski for state treasurer, you know, I think that's beneficial to him. And Mandela, by the way, is immensely beneficial.
Well, to watch how Mandela has grown as a candidate and as a communicator and as someone who really, his ad almost brought tears to your eyes. It was a pretty amazing thing. There was a competitive race for treasurer, a three-way race for treasurer. That type of turnout in the Democratic side, do we have any kind of measurement on how many Democrats turned out versus Republicans last night?
Yep, it was about an 85,000 Democratic advantage. What I was seeing early on, that could shift, so I'd have to look at the finals. But at one point, relatively late in the evening, I saw that there was a substantially higher Democratic turnout, and that's a big deal. I mean, you know, in a state that is considered to be evenly divided, one of the things you look for is a measure that tells you, you know, where's the energy? Which side has the enthusiasm? And my sense is that, even on the dynamic of the race as it went toward the close, you heard a lot more talk about the gubernatorial race on the Democratic side than you did about that intense Republican primary for U.S. Senate. And I think that tells you most of what you need to know, that there really is an energy with the Democrats this year.
Money. Obviously, Walker's dropping an anvil on Tony Evers' head today, $500,000 buy, and that's just the beginning. The Uline money that was spent on Kevin Nicholson. Now it's time for Kevin Nicholson to go make up with his parents.
Well, yeah, and he may actually have to do some explaining to Mr. Uline too. Because that was a lot of money at the end. I know that these are very, very rich people, but come on.
So what does that say about that you can't just create a candidate out of whole cloth and you know, build a paper tiger?
Right. I think that's a very good point. And here's one of the subtleties of the thing. Somebody said to me last night, well, where's the proportional amount of spending, you know, by a rich person on a candidate in a primary or in a competitive primary like that? And I said, well, that's not hard to find. You can go back and look at Herb Cole running for the U.S. Senate in 1988 in the Democratic primary with Tony Earle, Ed Garvey, Doug LaFollette. But the difference was that Herb Cole had been, you know, a leader of the state Democratic Party. He had a huge personal presence, especially in the Milwaukee area. And so as a result, he did spend a tremendous amount of his own money, but he was spending his money on behalf of someone himself that people knew. In this case, Elon was spending his money on behalf of someone that no one knew. Well, I should say that a few people knew, but the few people that really knew him, his family, were opposing him, right? And so you end up with a situation where, it was a harder sell.
Well, there were young Democrats who knew, members of the Young Democratic Party of Wisconsin that knew him back when, but they weren't voting in the Republican primary.
Yeah, I believe that Al Gore knew him, you know, among others.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thank you for coming to SliceOffice.com.